From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made as we move on through the summer and toward the opening of all the Catholic schools and public schools and whatever form that may take in the first probably few weeks of school, and hopefully everybody will be back to in-person once things calm down with the virus a little bit and they can safely go back. So we'll talk about that a little bit later in the program. But what a way to start a Catholic radio program with an introduction of a rabbi. Rabbi Seth Castleman joins us now. Rabbi, good day to you.
Hi, Bob. Nice to be here with you, as always.
Good to have you with us. We miss seeing you in person, but we know that's virtually impossible right now.
Indeed.
Yes.
Nice to hear your voice.
Yeah. Well, hopefully... we've been saying this for months now. Hopefully one day everything will go back to, quote, normal, whatever normal was. The good Lord seems to be speaking to us in a number of ways. But tell us about the Exodus Project first. We've talked about this before, but I know we have a number of new listeners. For those that haven't heard about it before, give us a kind of a thumbnail sketch of that.
Sure. Thank you, Bob. Exodus Project came out of the generous heart and wise mind of the bishop, of Bishop Soto, who saw as the Catholic Diocese was expanding its mission and its service in prisons and jails throughout the diocese, and there are some 25,000 to 30,000 people incarcerated within the Sacramento Diocese, because, of course, it's a very big geographic area and a lot of prisons and jails. He started to see more and more of the need for reentry services. And we spent a couple of years in planning and evaluating and sort of looking. It was a largely Catholic working group with myself involved as well, as I had a background in running programs in jails and prisons and reentry. And what came out of it was Exodus Project, which has been running for about a year and 9 months. And it's under the auspices of St. Vincent de Paul in collaboration with the Catholic Diocese. We offer mentoring, one-on-one and group mentoring for people that are in jail and prison and coming out. And we also offer other resources, especially now during the COVID-19 crisis. A lot of people are coming out and don't have housing, don't have employment. We offer hotel vouchers. We offer vouchers for the St. Vincent de Paul thrift store to get people in clothes and get furnishings for them if they have a place to live. Toiletries, that sort of thing. And we're always looking for new mentors. We'll be doing a new mentor training in September to train another dozen or so men and women to mentor one-on-one, men with men and women with women. This one, unfortunately, will probably need to be a virtual Zoom training, but it's an 18-hour training. And then, of course, we're always looking for financial support and donations to support the project.
So are we seeing... a great number of people being released prior to the expiration of their sentence because of COVID?
We are. And the governor had announced some 8,000 releases from the state system, and the county jail has been releasing more in the number of hundreds. But people are getting out early and often coming out, again, as I said, without housing or employment, or they had things lined up, but everything changed due to COVID, so the numbers are definitely going up. We're trying to add more of a housing component to our project as well, so that we can hopefully in the near future actually provide them with housing.
So when somebody is about to leave, well, either jail or prison, but you're dealing more with the county jails, is there any official state program, government program where are they going? What are they going to do?
Very good question. And there's a lot more being offered for people coming out of the state system, out of prison. They do a lot more planning and a lot more trying to find a place for people and make sure that they have housing. And coming out of the jails, and of course, more and more people now are coming out of the jails because of the realignment. And people are doing right. 2-3 years in jail, in county jail.
Used to be county jail was a max of about a year, I believe.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And now people are doing, for nonviolent offenses, theft, drug offenses, those sorts of things, DUIs, longer sentences in county jail, mm-hmm. but they don't get the same services. So they often come out with little or nothing except for the clothes on their back and whatever they had in their pockets when they were arrested. So there's really a need. And in fact, we get calls from the public defender's office who says, well, we have somebody who's in jail and the judge will let them go if they have a place to go and if they have a plan, but otherwise they have to stay in jail. Mm-hmm. The judge won't let them go early if they don't have a place to go. So housing, of course, is a huge need.
Housing and, unfortunately, in this environment, employment.
Of course. Of course, employment, too, yes, to earn an income.
It's so, you imagine how hard it is right now for anybody to find a job, anybody entering the job market, and suddenly you're coming out with a record even harder.
It makes it all the harder, yes. And, of course, California passed the ban the box where they can't officially ask you, but all they have to do is Google you and find out
sure. What
your record is. So we always encourage people to be upfront about it and be direct about it and how to show that they've been rehabilitated and how to show that they'll be a good employee.
Yeah, in this day and age, it's pretty hard to hide anything about one's past.
Indeed.
So we're with Rabbi Seth Castleman from the Exodus Project. Give us a sense of the overall mission of this project.
So the mission comes from, it's an interfaith project, but I would say the mission comes from the Christian value of caring for the least amongst us mm-hmm. and providing services that come from the heart and meet the needs of people where they are. And that's about family reunification. That's about getting them the basic needs for, most of the people coming out are poor, and their poverty is very entwined with their incarceration. The two are hard to separate. So the mission is very much about the mission of St. Vincent de Paul, of going from gospel values to caring for the poor and trying to do systemic change to end poverty, which is also why we do advocacy work at the Capitol as well.
And how is the project funded?
The project is funded the first 3 years, which we're coming up to the end of, and that we've done about 2 years now, has been half funded by Bishop Soto. Mm-hmm. The other half is largely through individual donors, mm-hmm. Many of them Catholic donors. We're getting some grants now from St. Vincent de Paul and from some small foundations, and we're also looking at the CARES Act to try to get some money for housing. For people coming out because of COVID. But as I said, we're always looking for new financial sources.
Very good. So you, as I understand it, are going to be moving into new digs.
Yes. We've been at the St. Vincent de Paul thrift store, which has been lovely but also very small, and we're moving into a Protestant church in Midtown, First mm-hmm. Baptist Church, which has a number of nonprofits there, including Sacramento area congregations together in Pico, California, and we'll be running our offices out of there. But we'll still be coming to the thrift store quite a bit to bring our clients down there to have mm-hmm. them get clothing and furnishings and such. But it will be a step up for us to have a little bit more space.
Thrift store is such a blessing in this diocese. The services they provide, and your family, my family, we can go there and shop, and that money helps St. Vincent de Paul and all the other things they're doing. So it's pretty
exactly. Although I don't know about your wife. My wife, when I took this job and she found out I was working at the thrift store, she said, "You can't take anything from the thrift store unless you bring something from the house to the thrift store."
Oh, good.
That was the deal, so we didn't get more collection of stuff in the house.
Well, I have four teenagers, and that is one of their favorite places to shop.
In fact, I
remember one day we were in there, and my daughter, who was about 14 at the time, the youngest daughter, and she saw like the old fashioned, I mean, really old fashioned, the kind of phone I had when I was, well, I didn't have my own phone, but the kind that you picked up the phone and talked to the operator, and she connected you uh-huh. with somebody, and she did. She looked at it and she said, "What is this?" And I said, "That's a telephone." And there was still the cord, that could click into the wall. And I said, you know, our house was built in 1951. I'll bet there's still some outlets that she takes the thing home, clicks it into the wall, and by golly, she gets a dial tone. She was happy as a lark, I'll tell you. I think it cost her 99 cents or something get the phone.
That's a
wonderful store. So will this move make you more accessible? Will it be helpful to your project?
That's the hope, that being downtown where more people can get to, when clients are coming and trying to get to the thrift store, I'm often picking them up because it's hard to get there by bus or light rail. So downtown will be a more central location to be in Midtown. So that's part of it as well. When people are coming from Natomas, they're coming from South Back, they're coming from all over. So it's a bit more of a central location. And also for our mentors, when we have our mentors meeting. Of course, much of what we're doing now is on Zoom. But I was actually just down at the jail a few minutes ago. I'm just on my way back now, visiting three new mentees who will be joining our program and getting out in the coming months. And I was telling them about we have new digs. And by the time they get out, we'll be in a new location on L-23rd.
So do the people who are incarcerated and about to be released, do they find you? Do you find them? How is the connection made?
Sure. So some of it's word of mouth, that the word has gotten around and we're on some of the info sheets and people get referred from other incarcerated folk. But I also go in a few times a year and do presentations inside the different units and tell them about our project, especially when we have a new cohort of mentors that are ready to be matched up. And I'll give a 15-minute pitch and answer questions and hand out applications. And then they fill out their applications and the sheriff's deputy send it back to us. And then I go in and interview all of them individually and think about not just are they going to be good for our program and a good fit, but also can we help them? Do I have a mentor who I think would be a good fit for them? And carefully match them up. And then I bring the mentor down and the three of us meet together. And if those people say it's a good fit, then they start working together.
Very good. And so what makes a good fit? Are there certain qualifications before they're going to be eligible for the program?
Well, on the mentee side, for the participants in jail, they need to have a sincere interest, and I need to be able to ascertain that it seems like they're ready to turn their life around. And of course, you know, who am I to tell? But to some extent, that's my job, and that's my training, is to be able to judge people to some extent. We want people who don't have violence in their background in the last 6 months to a year. And most of these people are in for nonviolent offenses. It's a lot of, as I said, DUIs, a lot of drug addiction, a lot of theft related to drug addiction. I want them to have some sort of a plan for when they come out. And we hope to, you know, the majority of the people have a faith background. We don't discriminate. If they don't, that's okay. But we also say that we're a faith-based organization. While we're non-proselytizing, we are a faith-based organization, and people who are coming from a faith perspective, I think that's often a better fit. For the mentors, they fill out a bigger application and have a longer interview and an extensive training. People who have gone through suffering and difficulty in their own lives and come out the other side, become the broken healer, I think are often, you know, the transformation of Saul to Paul or Jacob when in his wrestling with the angel from the Hebrew Bible, I think are models for us of what it takes to be a teacher, to be a mentor, to be a leader. Some of our mentors are returning citizens themselves. A number of our mentors are in recovery programs themselves. But they need to have a good listening ear, a good ability to be present for another human being, have compassion, but also boundaries. Boundaries is an important piece of this process together.
So what you're saying is, if somebody has to have been struck by lightning, would make a good... my wife, believe it or not, in college, they were one of those mountaineering classes. They were climbing the Mount of the Holy Cross, of all places, in Colorado, one of the 14s, and she got struck by lightning.
My goodness.
Yeah, she survived. I mean, it wasn't even, it was just, I guess, like a jolt. And I said, was it life-changing? And she said, yeah, indeed. If it ever happens to you, you're going to remember it forever. So maybe she will be calling you, Seth.
That would be wonderful, Bob. That would be wonderful.
Yeah. Tell us from a mentor standpoint, you've described who you're looking for. What's the training like for them? You said it was 18 hours.
It's an 18-hour process. We do two Thursday evenings and two Saturday days. A lot of the training is actually done by returning citizens who talk about their experience and also do role-playing. A lot of it's training on things like addiction, trauma, boundary training is a big part of what we do. We do a lot of role-playing and a lot of discussion of what are appropriate boundaries and how that evolves over time. We train them in how to bring faith into it without pushing it. We train them in, as I said, drugs and alcohol and how to see the signs of that and how to work with that. We bring a lot of experts in, and both experts in the sense of people who have gone through this difficulty in their lives, but also experts who are professionals in their field. And sometimes, of course, those are the same people. But it's a very good training. And as I said, we'll be doing another one in September. And then we, after that, they'll be matched with, it's a good time for me to get to know the people better and then be able to match them up with a mentee.
And, you know, the faith element, I know you, it's, I guess, the word, you don't want to push too hard, and yet if you can share your faith and pass on the faith, of course faith's a gift from God, but boy, you're going to make their lives so much better.
Absolutely. And if they're interested, we say go for it, and if they're not interested, we say, you know, may the faith inspire you to do your good work, but that it's not our job to be, you know, pushing it on anyone. And our mentors really get that. People that want to do more Catholic mission work, we send them in other directions, and there are other wonderful projects to work with, of course, in that regard. But for us, it's more a matter of the faith inspiring their work. But some of the mentors, when the mentee is interested, do Bible study together.
Mm-hmm.
Or the mentee says, I really want to reconnect with the faith community. Will you bring me to your church? Or will you go with me as I go back to my church and I have trouble, you know, sort of walking back with my head held high? I sometimes say that for a returning citizen, the longest walk is on a Sunday morning from the curb to the pew. It's a hard road to take as a returning citizen. There can be a lot of shame. So having a mentor who's there with you and has talked to the priest or the pastor or the imam or the rabbi ahead of time can help help that process.
So we're about 2 years into this project. Do we have some fruits of it now?
Out for a minute.
Rabbi, are you there?
Sorry.
No problem.
Say that one more time.
Do we have some fruits of this after 2 years now?
We have a number of people that have gone through it and been very successful. We have others that have sort of gotten some out of it and then sort of dropped by the wayside after a few months. And we have others that were really interested when they were inside, and then by the time they get out, they sort of turn in a different direction. So we're batting probably about 500 at the moment.
Which in baseball is pretty good.
In basketball, not as good.
Not as good, that's right. Especially if you're shooting free throws. So have in the 2 years, given, you know, your case studies now, you just described two or three or four different scenarios that happen. Have you made adjustments, or are there things you go, when we went into this, we thought this might be an outcome, but we're finding that's not the case?
Right. Yes, we are making some adjustments, and one of the big ones is trying to get housing as part of our project, working with Sacramento Self-Help Housing, that if we can have some houses where people can go for 90 days and we can provide them a mentor as part of that, we would know where they are, we would have that stability for them. That's the big piece we've been working on, is trying to get funding through the county, through the city, through the state, to be able to have a housing component where we give them interim housing for 90 days and then help them to place in long-term housing. Since so many of the people come out, something like 70% of the people who are coming out of county jail after a longer sentence are coming out without secure housing.
Wow. So a large percent of them presumably are not going back to a traditional family situation.
Right. A lot of them have estranged kids or kids mm-hmm. in Child Protective Services that they'd like to reconnect with. A lot of them have burned a lot of bridges. Sometimes they have places they can go, but it's with their old thugging and drugging buddies or their old thugging and drugging family, and they don't want to go back to that environment. So if they're looking for a change, it often means needing to end your old relationships and start new relationships. And when they come out and say, well, I can sleep on this guy's couch, but he's the guy I used to use with, or I can go back to my mom's, but she's using and this and that and the other, that's where we want to try to break the cycle and give them a new opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you know cases, I know cases where people came out with the best of intentions and the best of help, and sooner or later they got back in with the old group and went right back to where they had been in terms of whatever kind of crime they were committing. And it's human nature is sometimes very difficult to, and yet, as my dad always taught me, you know, there but for fortune go I, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, and so, Have there been anything that surprised you in the first 2 years about the Exodus Project? You know, either good or, you know, not so good?
That's a good question. I think it's been harder, having worked a lot in prisons, when people are doing more time, they're more likely to have hit rock bottom mm-hmm. and really be ready to make the change. It's been a lot harder working with people coming out of jail. They're doing shorter sentences, and it's a little bit more of a revolving door, where they're more likely to, they're more likely to reoffend. So I've been surprised, but it's also somewhat understandable that it's harder to work with people after just 6 months of incarceration than it is after 20 years of incarceration.
So, you know, the big change a few years ago, where we were seeing longer sentences within county jails, do we have any data on that, of what the effect of that has been?
You know, I haven't seen much in the way of data on that. I do know that they get less services when they're in county jail, and there's a severe overcrowding issue now with the jail than there was with the prisons. So I would say it's been moderately successful, and there's been some benefits, but there've also been some real problems with it.
So county jails have been traditionally set up first almost as a holding cell prior to trials, and maybe you're going to get sent to state prison or for lesser offenses. And so I guess it makes sense that there are fewer services available for somebody that's maybe going to be in jail for 3 months or 6 months or in the old days a max of a year, as opposed to a prison where somebody might have a 20-year sentence and you have all kinds of programs.
Exactly. Things like getting a GED, getting a college degree. They have some job training programs. In fact, RCCC, the branch jail that we do most of our work at down south of Elk Grove, they have a horse ranch there where they take wild horses that get brought in from BLM land, and some of the inmates there are trained to then train the horses, and then they have an adoption program where they basically auction the horses off at the end of 3 or 4 months or 5 months of training, and then the inmates, the men, get trained as horse trainers and potentially can get a job on the way out. But that's sort of one of their specialty programs. There's not nearly the same types of programs like that or education programs that they have in the prison system.
Are there employers out there that you can pick up the phone and say, we think we have a candidate for you for a job or not?
There are some. And in fact, that's another thing for your listeners to consider, is that if you're a small business owner and you would consider hiring somebody to give them a second chance after they've gone through our program, we're always looking. And I do from time to time get calls from people who say, I'm part of St. Vincent de Paul, I'm part of this parish, and I run a small business, and I'd like to, you know, I'd like you to consider me as one of your employers. And there are some big employers who are better at hiring than others. So there are some. And we hire some of our returning citizens right at the thrift store. So it goes from close to and right at home to further afield. There was one mentor who got her mentee matched up at Christ the King Retreat Center. She had a job there for a while. So we do it in all sorts of ways.
Well, it seems like, just off the top of my head, family connection, housing, employment, those are three big ones.
Yes, yes. And family reunification, restorative justice work to try to get the family brought back together is, of course, a huge piece as well.
Yeah, it's a complicated problem. If you had a $20 million budget, what are there things you would do differently?
The first and foremost would be having housing that people can move into where it's supported with wraparound services.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second would be employment. Job readiness and training and that sort of thing, and having a social worker who can work with people around addiction issues, since addiction is so often at the core of all the other issues, or you could say it's covering up deeper issues even underneath that. But addiction is, of course, a huge barrier.
Boy, I remember going back decades to college and going down to the prison in Vacaville as part of a legal class, and interviewing inmates and who were in there for various crimes, some of them very serious, and going through their rap sheets with them and talking to them and seeing if maybe they had some kind of a case we could refer to an attorney. Just it was all part of our training and classwork.
Mm-hmm.
And almost without exception, whether I was dealing with somebody that was literally in there for taking another human life or someone in there for armed robbery, I mean, serious crimes, when you went way back on their rap sheet to when they were 14 or 15 or 16, it was almost invariably drugs was their first offense. And it was just kind of a cascade after that.
And usually if you go a little bit further back from that, you have real trauma. And you have childhood trauma and issues that led to the addiction issues, that led to the criminal behavior.
Yeah, we've heard that many times. I don't want to hear about your childhood. We all had a hard time. But it's true. It's really true.
Yeah.
Somebody who's abused or neglected as a child has just a far worse chance of having a good outcome than somebody else.
Yeah, and we don't have to use it as an excuse, but we can use it as a pathway to healing and to recovery.
Yeah. We're with Rabbi Seth Castleman talking about the Exodus Project. How can people sign up for the mentoring training in September?
Sure.
Or maybe learn a little more about it.
Absolutely. So we have pages on both the St. Vincent de Paul website and the diocese website. So if you go to this diocese website and you put in the search Exodus Project, it will bring you right to our page. And people are always welcome to also just call 916-669-0612. And I'm happy to talk to them about it personally and tell them about how they can get involved, how they can support us financially, how they can become a mentor or an employer who hires. But all that information is also on both the St. Vincent de Paul Sacramento website and also the Sacramento Catholic Diocese website.
Very good. And the Sacramento Catholic Diocese website is SCD, Sacramento Catholic Diocese, SCD.org. And, it's very extensive, and you can find it right away. Well, Seth, you're doing the Lord's work out there. Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us. Thanks for all you do, and may the good Lord bless the Exodus Project and bear great fruit.
Thank you, Bob. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
You too. That's Rabbi Seth Castleman, and it's a great person to have leading that that program. And I'll tell you, someone with a good heart and a good mind, and not afraid of doing a lot of hard work. And but boy, that's multifaceted, as you could tell. Gabe, you're in law enforcement.
Somewhat, yes. Yep.
That's it's complicated.
And opening yourself up to the world of jail and prison, if you're not someone who is supposed to be there, I guess is the most gentle way to put it, is definitely a commitment into itself. I mean, you hear a lot of people say who work in prisons more than jail, but they say that it's very, you feel sometimes like you're one of the inmates because you're there all the time and you're sort of, right, you're with them all the time and things like that. And especially in a lot of smaller towns where that's sort of the only industry.
Right. And it's true. A lot of smaller towns, California and elsewhere, they lobby to get a prison because of the jobs.
Yeah.
And it does become the prime employer. Avenal, right. You think of that, a big prison in Susanville. That's not the prime employer in Susanville, but a very big employer.
Yeah, it's one of those sort of Bruce Springsteen-esque sort of songs where the factory is the town. Exactly. It's kind of the same thing. It's
Chowchilla.
Yeah, Chowchilla's like that. And it's always in areas, at least in California, it's kind of hard to get away from a city in California that you're not too far away from. But, there's there's Southern California, there's, San Diego's nearby, a prison and things like that. But, yeah, for the most part, it's almost like the suburb unto itself or this industry right. unto itself. And it's a weird industry because it's an industry that doesn't produce anything like the Tyson Chicken Factory.
Right.
It's like you're ideally nothing's coming out of there that's not supposed to come out of there.
Right.
Ideally people are coming out of there reformed and not criminals anymore. But and to walk yourself in there when it's not something you're really getting paid to do as a career, like a guard or a medical professional who works there, you're going in there for ministry. It's commendable just to make that decision.
Oh, and the Catholic Church is a number of people are chaplains. Some of them are deacons. I know deacons. I know that Bishop Soto has always been very big on prison ministry. I remember Bishop Garcia when he was here.
Yeah.
Bishop Garcia was very big on prison ministry. And
he was big on it when he was in Monterey as well.
It's so important, and it's right there in Matthew 25, and it seems almost odd when you first read it. You go, okay, what are the things Jesus would ask us to do? Well, you feed the hungry, of course, clothe the naked. Yeah, that makes sense. Be a good neighbor, welcome the stranger. Yeah, all these things that may be a little bit hard to do sometimes, but sounds like the right thing to do. He says, visit people in prison. Right there in Matthew 25. And he doesn't say because they're wrongly incarcerated or they got a raw deal. Or he just says visit people in prison.
Well, I think a lot of times if you do the ones preceding that, you have less people in prison to visit.
That's for sure.
It's sort of unfortunate that that's the end of the road for a lot of people of a road that,
these great programs like Get on the Bus where we try to keep kids in touch with their parents who are incarcerated. Obviously that's a big thing of in terms of recidivism. If people have family connection, and can they get back to their family? Can they reunify with their family? Can they be a dad or a mom to those kids again in a real meaningful way?
Yeah,
that's a big part of it. But it's got a lot of tentacles to it in terms of things to deal with.
I mean, even if they're, let's say, life in prison people, they can still be a parent by explaining to your child, like, this is why I'm here and don't do what I did or don't, do these things. Because, I've known a lot of people who, from my other job and from just life, people who've made some major mistakes, and they're not bad people, but they've made some major mistakes. And a lot of times those things can end up, you have to, everybody pays, like they say, for everything. And eventually when the bill comes due and that's where you end up, you would like to hope that those people would at least be aware enough to know, like, I don't want to push this onto my kids or whatever.
It's funny too, when you see the difference, sometimes, people got involved in drugs when they were 14 and I never straightened out. And here they are, they're 50 years old and they're a completely different person.
Yeah.
And yet they're still incarcerated.
Yeah.
Because of this path of crime. I remember the first time I did the legal counseling down in Vacaville. We weren't able to legally do anything. We weren't lawyers at that point, but
right.
But it was part of our training. when that door clanked behind me, mm-hmm. when they let us in, to mm-hmm. boy, that was just the noise, just the sound of it mm-hmm. was made your heart contract. I mean, it was yeah. like, wow.
I mean, prison shows use that noise in the introduction or the whatever, just because there's a visceral reaction to, there are certain things that are visceral reactions yeah. and that's
bypasses the brain.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember, I've worked with animals for many, many, many years in veterinary hospitals and SPCAs and now with my job currently. And, I've been growled at, bit at by every, you know, domestic animal you can think of. And after a while, you kind of just go, you know, whatever. One time we had a wolf hybrid at our vet, and it was much more heavy on the wolf, low on the hybrid. It was real. I mean, I've been around wolf hybrids, and this thing was basically like pretty close to a wolf. Yeah. And I went to get a picture of it for my wife. I was like, oh, wow, this one's really pretty. And it growled at me in a way that I've never been growled at before in my life. And I've been growled at by every possible breed you can think of.
Did you have the waiver for it to sign?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was 6 feet away from me. Pre-COVID. I was a pre-COVID wolf. And I would take the picture, and it growled at me in this way. And it was just something in me viscerally. I was like, oh, something back in my lineage was eaten by one of these. And there's something in my DNA that is telling me, you know, bad. This is yeah. bad. And there's something about that. Like, they tell you, like, home, if you're ever going to buy a firearm for home defense, at a shotgun, the noise of a shotgun cocking is something no one's ever heard. There's no other mistake that with anything else. Yeah. I think it's the same thing with that prison door. It's like there's something in you that just knows this is not a good thing.
Yeah.
And you just sort of, yeah, like you said, it bypasses the brain. It's in that, it's deep down in the DNA.
Yeah, it's such a compelling noise, you know, and it's mm-hmm. like, and you think, how can, boy, when that first happens and you're incarcerated, I've always felt, and I know you got issues of privacy and it's not a show place, but I've always felt if you really wanted to lower the rate of crime, you would take third graders on a field trip to San Quentin
mm-hmm.
or Folsom.
I feel scared straight.
And say, this is what happens.
Yeah.
This is what happens. Yeah. You know, people say, oh, it's just too harsh for a third grader in the old nightmare. It's probably true. There are a lot of reasons you don't do it. But, and you know, you don't want to make the inmates be on display or anything. But boy, if a kid could see that.
Yeah,
presumably it would have an effect. You
know? Well, I would hope the whole on display thing. I think it's one of those things where, I think if you go by the Scared Straight sort of documentaries that have been done and things that have been done, a lot of those men and women want to do that because they know they and through a lot of stuff like what Rabbi Castleman is doing and other ministries will do. A lot of these men and women become aware of the idea of acceptance of their place by their own doing.
Right.
You know, a lot of people sort of have that sort of, it was a raw deal. I shouldn't have. And there are some that are, you know, wrongfully accused, wrongfully convicted, things like that. But a lot of these men and women who are career criminals in and out of jail still have a hard time accepting that. And I think some of them do. And then the ones that do, a lot of times will say, you know what, I do want to help. And I do want to make sure no one else ends up where I end up.
You'll frequently at a high school see, an assembly, and here's somebody who has been incarcerated.
Yeah.
Or you'll see somebody who got sent away for 5 years for killing somebody in a DUI.
Right.
And saying, here I was. I was you.
Right.
Two or three years ago, I was one of you. I got stupid. I got drunk. I drove a car and I killed somebody.
Right.
And they're not going to say, well, you've been a good kid. We're just going to slap you on the wrist. No, you killed somebody.
Right.
You're going to prison.
You ended a life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know with my own kids, seeing them coming home from an assembly like that, and they found religion.
Yeah.
they got the word. They got the message.
Well, I'd rather my kid has a nightmare about that than my kid goes to jail.
That's right.
So, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where I think it's beneficial. There's one of those sort of risk to reward kind of things as a dad that you think about as a parent. And I mean, not that, you know, I think it's going to be one of those things where I think you've got the unfortunate part of that is when you're younger enough with kids, a lot of parents don't have the idea that maybe something they're doing is pushing their kids that direction. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they're not going to have the foresight to think that, like, well, you know, yeah, it's a good idea.
It's probably the last thing you're worried about, that your kid's going to end up in prison.
Yeah, yeah.
8 years old and curled up on the couch reading Good Night Moon, or what? I guess right. you're four when you're reading Good Night Moon.
My son's on chapter books now. Yeah, yeah. So. He's seven and he's got the who was books and the where was books. Yeah. He loves those things. Yeah, and the I survived.
He's passed Green Eggs and Ham.
Yeah, a bit. But he reads them to his sister now, which is nice because then it's like, you know, hey, can you read this, Dad? I'm like, your brother can. I'm doing dishes.
it's strange how kids' books are sort of universal. Books that we had when I was a kid are still, you know.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Dr. Seuss still has the
golden books, they were called. It had the golden seal sort of.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I don't remember. That.
I mean, it's funny
Bobby
when
had an airplane. Kind yeah, of books. Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's funny when you have kids, like people will get you. Like I got, I think, 3 copies of Goodnight Moon. I got, you know, and then there's somebody has sort of spun off on that. There's like Goodnight California now. We have that one. And it's like, you know, Goodnight the Redwoods and Mirror Woods. Goodnight Golden Bears, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But it's like, yeah, you're right. It's interesting how it's universal. One of the things my son loves to read is there's a lot of biblical books for kids. Mm-hmm. Like, that sort of like say
we have people on from Ignatius Press their relationship with Magnificat and Vivian Doudreau, great editor for Ignatius Press and some beautiful books for kids
and my son has one, and I know like the, you know how the Vatican is very big into astronomy.
Yeah.
I always mess that up. It would have been weird if I said astrology. Everyone would have been like, wait a minute.
I took astronomy in college, and I start to tell my kids, I took astrology in college.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Oh, let's do a reading. Yeah, no. I took astronomy in college, too, and there's way more math than they sold it, so I was not good at it. Yeah, I thought we were just going to lay around and look at the stars all day.
It was not one of my better grades.
Yeah. Anyway, they have books like that'll be like about that. Right, astronomy books, and it's like, and then at the end of each one of the lessons, it ties into how this relates to something biblical, and so it's in a way, it's one of those things for kids because kids are fascinated by the sky, and a lot of times, you know, you can learn so much more if you sort of hook them with one thing and then tell them something else, and so they get, wait, it's like, this is the Big Dipper, and this is this, and this is this, and this was actually seen by this, and this is how biblically, and stuff, and the North Star and all this different stuff, and it's, they're great books. My son loves them, and he gets to the point now where he has like a little nighttime headlamp thing, and he'll sit there and just read with his little headlamp on until he falls asleep. And
oh, that's great.
Yeah, I love it. I mean,
he'll either be a librarian or a coal miner, one or the other.
Exactly. Well, he did ask for a canary, so that's a possibility.
I can tell you, though, when we did the first moon landing, I was really hoping that they were going to find cheese. I really was. You know, it was like, because they had it all figured out. We knew it was going to be gravel and sand and all this stuff. And I was just hoping.
Were you sitting at home like, just try it. Just taste it.
Just taste it. Maybe
they're not trying to eat it, guys. I can't imagine what that, but I can't think of other things I've lived through in my life for the most part like that. There were TV events were never really good things. You know, like 9/11. You know, it's like there was nothing, I can't really think of anything in my lifetime, you know, being 44, that we've sat around and as a nation and watched in triumph like you got to do with the moon landing.
Yeah, well, that was big. I mean, that was huge. That and beating the Russians in hockey in the Olympics.
Okay, I did live through that, but I don't remember. Ice. Yeah, you know, 82, 81.
Yeah.
We beat them to the moon and we beat them on the ice.
Yeah, that's about it.
But yeah, it's one of those things where I wish there was something more. Well, I mean, I guess there's, you know, some great things have happened, obviously, but yeah. That's one of those ones that, like, if you live through it, you're lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think VE Day and VJ Day after World War II.
Yeah.
Seeing some of the photos of those people coming back from the war, my dad being one of them, I wasn't alive. But, wow. You know, to see those wars end after 4, 5, 6 years.
Well, especially because everyone thought that that was going to be the last war.
Yeah.
Because everyone said that about World War I.
Well, my kids, I mean, they're taking world history and all, and they say, so when did they name World War One World War One? You know,
yeah. that would have been a little bit like nowadays a conspiracy theorist. That would have been one of those ones like, hey, they named it World War One during the war because they knew number two was coming. Yeah.
So
that is interesting. But
before you go.
Yeah.
Speaking of working with animals.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've got our victory garden going. We're raising our own, mostly my wife and one daughter who's in FAA.
Right.
Loves gardening. So first time we actually have big, plump tomatoes growing. But we've had very little luck growing. So we have a yard that doesn't quite get full sun. And, you know, and so
now a big, plump raccoons.
We've got, and one day we go out there and talk about low-hanging fruit.
Oh, yeah.
Big,
and tomatoes are fruit.
Bites.
Yep.
Of these, and I'm going, that's not an insect. That's not a tomato hornworm eating those things. That's a, and all we could think was raccoons.
Raccoons, skunks, or opossum.
That, and we've seen in our town many times raccoons walking down the street.
Yeah, the only thing with...
We've smelled skunks, never actually seen a skunk.
That's a good thing. The only thing with raccoons living in an urban environment, they get so used to eating our trash that tomatoes aren't exactly
You know, they take one or two bites. They don't eat the whole tomato.
Yeah, it might be a possum more likely. It depends. They have really big, long mouths, so it depends on the kind of bite.
So it's interesting because my wife starts researching it. You know, first put up wire around it. That didn't do any good.
Right, yeah.
Like chicken wire.
That's probably a possum. Not a possum, then.
Then
they're lazy.
Well, that's what we thought. You know, and then there were a lot of squirrels around, but that doesn't sound like something a squirrel would.
They will. I mean, the squirrels are pretty opportunistic.
And they're very agile. They're running around the fence. So
they dig, too.
But then she thought, you know what? What? Because it's always at night. What about the sound of the human voice? If there were two people talking around the tomatoes, they're probably not going to come up. So she takes a radio, puts it in there, turns it to KFBK,
not relevant radio.
Well, we didn't want to say that our show scares animals.
Well, true,
and
but
boom,
yeah.
It stopped.
Wow.
It stopped. I don't know what they're playing at night.
I was going to say, yeah. Well, I mean, that's because.
I don't know. Maybe it's Limbaugh reruns. I don't know what it was, but it's Tom Sullivan. I don't know what it was. But
the liberal raccoons.
But by golly, it stopped.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean,
there may be a research paper there.
Maybe. Then I would think it might be raccoons, and they're a little more in tune with stuff like that. They're better, a little better hearing.
So what we're going to do is we're going to put it in there and play the Bishop's Hour. And see.
I mean, you might get too many animals in there, and they might be all eaten by that time.
They'd be very whole. They would say grace before they ate the tomatoes.
I would say it's probably raccoons, most likely. But then again, raccoons like to wash their food.
I know. I said that to my wife. Where are they washing their food?
Honestly, it probably is skunks then. Yeah, skunks. They won't spray unless they're being threatened. So, and they're pretty bold. So are the raccoons, but raccoons typically will wash their food. They'll grab it and wash it. So, yeah, probably skunks. I mean, it's possible it's possums, but they're pretty lazy, and if you put chicken wire around it, I end up having to get possums off of fences where the two slats come together. They're big, giant tails. They'll try to jump from one yard to another, and the tail gets stuck in between, and they're just hanging there.
Yeah.
But possums, for everyone, are very nice animals. They won't hurt you. They don't carry rabies. Like,
they hiss.
They do hiss because they're pretty useless as far as defensive. Their defense mechanism literally is to play dead and smell. So not exactly the most vicious animal in the world. I mean, if your defense mechanism is the thing you don't want to have happen to you, it's not exactly a vicious animal.
Amazing, all the different species. And these ones are night animals.
Right.
You know, they don't like the light.
Right.
It's just strange.
In fact, this time of year, though, some of them are out in the daytime because what will happen is they're leaving their little nests and the youngs are becoming sort of autonomous adults. And then they'll fight with other ones to try to find supremacy for a place to have a little den. And then the one that loses a lot of times is sort of wandering and then the sun comes up. And they don't know what to do. I had a skunk the other day at work who literally tried to be like an ostrich and bury his head under some bark thinking I wouldn't see him.
Oh, yeah.
I had to poke him with like a long pole. I was like, hey, come on, buddy. And he tried to spray, and I'm like, just keep moving. And, you know, this guy, I can see you. And he kind of moved on. But, like, people will call us that, like, in the daytime, there's animals out that aren't supposed to be. So, yeah, it's a weird time right now. So, you probably have a little bit of a shifting of the guard in your neighborhood with animals, too.
Wow.
I know.
all of, you know, people can talk about evolution, and we don't have any Catholic teaching doesn't have a problem with evolution, but mm-hmm. boy, you see all the different species, mm-hmm. all the uniqueness, all the difference. We got a little tortoise, and you see how different that animal is
yeah.
from another, and you say, wow, what is the good Lord thinking?
Yeah. Well,
you know, it's mind-boggling.
I know. And then what else I think is funny, too, is, I mean, I know a lot of sort of vegetarians and vegans might find this odd, but like, also think about, like, cows and how amazing of an animal they are. And then also on top of that, they're delicious. And so it's strange. It's like God made you to be like, hey, you're going to be able to do this, keep this, you know, part of the ecosystem down and do this. Also, the apex predator on the planet, it's going to really enjoy eating you.
It's amazing. It's amazing, too, as my son, we were talking today, and we were talking about creation, and we were talking about evolution and all that. And he said, it's amazing that one animal didn't become, because he says, and they all coexist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that one animal didn't become the dominant animal to the point
right.
where there were no other species on Earth
right.
because this one animal just wiped every other animal out. It doesn't happen.
Well, it's like cheetahs are the fastest animal on the planet, but the antelope species that they chase aren't as fast, but they have more endurance. So yeah. if the cheetah starts too far away, it can outrun them.
Yeah.
It's just that weird symbiotic thing that happens. Yeah, it's an amazing, amazing world we live in.
I don't know. We need something to wipe out mosquitoes. I know bats try.
Mosquitoes are do you know that mosquitoes are responsible for more human deaths than any other animal on the planet?
I believe it.
Yep. Because of malaria. Yep.
Malaria. And every now and then, pretty rare, but West Nile. In this area.
Yeah.
The other day, there was a headline in the paper saying, cases of West Nile found somewhere in the valley here. You know, like, come on.
And it's like come on, guys. Give us a break.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. It's like the murder hornets and then the sandstorm. And it's just kind of like,
yeah.
I had a friend who wrote on their social media that I like about 2020. I was like, I can't believe I stayed up all night and said Happy New Year for this.
Oh, yeah. Indeed. Well, yeah, it's God's creation is it's mind-boggling. All the variety and all the wonderful animals that and plants. It's just on and on and on. We'll take a quick break. Back with more. No break. We've run flat out of time. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. God bless. We'll talk to you again soon. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy Ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, showing that God is love and God is just. Death. You call me into life. some reconciled.